sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastoma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Okay, we're on footnote 1 on page 11.
Yes.
Okay. In other words, the Lord is never transformed. However, his Achintya Shakti becomes transformed as the living entities in the material world. This conclusion is called Shakti Parinamavad and is accepted by the Vaishnavas. The impersonalist conclusion is called Brahma Parinamavad or Vivartavad. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura elaborates in Jiva Dharma. Parinamavad may be divided into two concepts. Brahma Parinamavad, the transformation of Brahman, and Tat Shakti Parinamavad, the transformation of the energies of Brahman. According to the adherents of Brahma Parinamavad, the inconceivable impersonal Brahman transforms itself, on one hand, into the living entities, on the other hand, into the material universe. They conclude that Brahman is the only known entity. Hence, this theory may be called Advaitavad, monistic impersonalism. The second group, Tat Shakti Parinamavad, states that Tat, Brahman, does not accept transformation, but that the Achintya Shakti of Brahman is transformed partially into the Jiva Shakti, which manifests the Jivas, and partly into the Maya Shakti, which manifests the material universe. If this view is acknowledged, then Brahman himself does not become transformed. Thus, Sadananda writes in his commentary, Vedanta Sar 59, If the source is the Absolute, then anything generated out of the Absolute is also an entity partaking of the Absolute nature. But the intelligence identifies the generated entity as distinct from its origin. This is known as vikara, transformation. Right, so in other words, the living entities are coming from the Lord, so they're non-different, but because of intelligence, then they see the distinction. Right? So that's where you get the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Right, that the difference at the same time is the commonality, because that's what intelligence can see. What's the difference? What's the same? Does that make sense? Yes.
We say that Achintya Shakti is the source of living entities.
Yes.
And also the source of material universe.
Yes.
But then we say that Balaram,
right,
is also the source.
But he's the Shakti Man. So it has to be done through Shakti. So in other words, it's the Lord Shakti that is doing it. Now, whether you want to just take the general that is Krishna, because he's doing everything, or you want to get very specific, then who exactly is doing it? You know what I'm saying? Because if you want to, in very exact, then Krishna is expanding his Balaram, who's expanding his Mahanarayan, who's expanding the Chaturvyuha, then Shankarshan expands as Mahanarayan, as Maha Vishnu, then as Shankarshan, then as Prajumna in the universe, and then Aniruddha is the Supersoul. You know, so depending on which aspect you're dealing with, then you'll say it's his energy that's doing. But the point is it's the energy that transforms. Right, because the Lord only deals with his internal potency. Right? Then that internal potency, that's what transforms. Because he doesn't transform. So he only interacts with the internal potency. But the internal potency expands as the external potency in the Jivas.
So
Right? So that means in the Sarup Shakti, you have the internal potency, then the external potency in the jivas. Right? So that together is called Sarup Shakti. You know, when you're saying it's non-different from the Lord, it's part and parcel of the Lord, like that. But when you're talking about the inconceivable aspect of this energy, then you call it Achinti Shakti. Or if you want to call it that it's transcendental and all that, you know, to all the Shaktis, then you call it Para Shakti. Right? Or it's the Shakti of Para, of transcendence, you know, of Krishna. So the same Shakti has many names, depending which attribute you want to bring out. Right? It's the same attribute. Right? You know, just like you have the woman, and so then, is she a daughter? Is she a wife? Is she a mother? Is she a sister? So it's the same person, but depending upon which aspect you're bringing out, then you have a name. Does that make sense? So it's all one energy, but it has these main subdivisions. Right? Then within those, you have so many subdivisions. So it's basically unlimited. Is that okay? Okay. What is Vikara? It is a separate, distinct identity manifesting from the Absolute, the Source. Yogurt produced from milk retains some similarity with milk. However, the intelligence designates yogurt with a separate identity from milk. This is Vikara. Therefore, the view of Brahma Parinamabad, that this material universe and the jivas are transformations of Brahman, and yet still non-different from Brahman, without separate identities from Brahman, is very distorted and lacking in intelligence. Right? Because they can't tell the difference. It's natural that there is a difference, but they're unable to tell this difference. Even though they're jnanis, so they claim to be very intelligent. So that's a bit of a problem. Right? Yeah? Yes.
What exactly is their problem?
They don't accept that Brahman. Because Brahman means that their whole point is that all there is Brahman. Mm-hmm. Right? Sarva kalvidam Brahma. Right? So everything is Brahman. So that principle is all right, but then they take it that Brahman can only be one thing. So there can only be Brahman. There can't be something else other than Brahman. Right? So they can't see vikara transformations in Brahman.
But they say that it's Brahma Parinamabada.
Yes, so that's the problem, is that Brahman is unchanging, but at the same time then you get jivas and illusion, which are not real, but they've come from Brahman, so how can Brahman transform and how can Brahman be illusion? And how can Brahman be illusion? Right? So illusion has to come from Brahman. And then Brahman under the illusion becomes jiva, right? So it's not a very strong position. So because they don't accept that Brahman has qualities, even though they'll say it's unlimited, it's eternal, it's unchanging, and if one will notice that according to grammatical rules, those are all, you know, qualities and definitions of something. But, you know, their intelligence finesses that. You know, just like ourselves, that we'll be doing something and maybe it's not right, but we have our reasons for it. So we just overlook it. You know, other people can see it, but we kind of just finesse it. So amongst ourselves, then everything's good. Right? Amongst everybody else, then it doesn't work so well. Is that... Furthermore, if according to the adherents of this school of thought, the impersonal Brahman is the one singular entity without qualities and distinctions, whereby is the possibility of transformation of such a qualityless entity, illusory or otherwise? Right? Even if you say, well, it's an illusion, it's there, but how can there be illusion? Because the illusion itself has to be Brahman. Brahman doesn't transform, even though they're saying it does. That's the thing. Brahman is unchanging, but then they're saying it's changing. What we'll say is, no, Brahman always stays Brahman. Brahman has energy. That changes. Right? Because there's always a masculine-feminine principle. So Brahman is the masculine, then there's energy, which is feminine. Yes.
Can we say they don't accept the energies of Brahman?
They don't accept the, because they say it's nirguna. Right? We'll say it's nirguna, meaning no material qualities, but they say nirguna, meaning no qualities at all, not even spiritual. So this is where their problem lies. Because Brahman being nirguna means without spiritual qualities, then how do you get transformation? Because only Brahman can't transform, but Shakti does. Right? So our philosophy explains it so comfortably. There's problem from beginning to end with everything that they're saying. But that's the whole point, due to illusion. Because what's the point? Now, for us, okay, everything is Brahman, but because of transformation, it's different kinds of Brahman. So there's the original supreme Brahman, then there's his energies, the Achintya Shakti, and then that Achintya Shakti has the internal, external, and jivas. So, at the end of the day, where do we end up? Right? We're still jivas, we're still energy. Right? Now, with the Brahmavad philosophy, if there's only one entity, where do we end up?
Brahma.
Yeah, we're God. So much more satisfying to the ego that you're the supreme than I'm energy and I'm an idiot. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, because if you ask, well, how is it there? Why would it transform past time? But everyone's miserable, so why are you trying to get back to the Brahman platform? If it's past time, it shouldn't be miserable. Right? You know, you don't on purpose go out at the most busiest time of day in traffic and go to the most busiest, you know, road so you get stuck in traffic for an hour and a half. You don't do that. And then people say, why are you doing this? And it says, oh, it's pastimes. You don't do that. You know? Is that? Further, if it's accepted that such a qualityless Brahman is transformable, then Brahman is robbed of the absolute and detached status. Hence, the theory of Brahmaparinamavad is very inaccurate. Means there's aspects that are correct, but as far as a complete philosophy in that, it's very, very inaccurate. Very, very short. Right? Does that make sense? However, the Shakti Parinamavad theory does not suffer from these logical deficiencies. Here, Brahman is certainly detached, independent, and immutable. However, in this understanding, the unlimitedly powerful Achintya Shakti of Brahman, capable of making the impossible possible, transforms partially into the Jiva Shakti and partially into the illusory Maya Shakti. When Brahman desired the Jivas to be manifest, immediately his transcendental Jiva Shakti went into action and produced the innumerable Jivas. Right? Now, we also understand that just in here is that the Jivas are eternal, so it's just a matter of them manifesting. So we're manifest from the Jiva Shakti, so unless the Jiva Shakti is how you say, identified or manifest, how do we specifically manifest? You understand? So that means it's always there. It's just a matter of its what do you call it? What do you say? Not incongruent. Means it's unperceivable. Right? It's just part of Krishna. So then when he expands his internal potency, then you can perceive the masculine and feminine principle. Then the feminine principle expands again, then you get the jiva. But otherwise, we're always there, but it's just a matter of whenever we're manifest. Right? Because we're eternal, but there may be a point in time when we manifest. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes, yes. But so we're never created because we're non-different from Krishna, so Krishna's not created. So this whole thing is, oh, but when is everything created? When is God created? Nothing's, it's all eternal. But it's just the manifestation. That's when you can say there's a particular time. Here, in the spiritual world, it's eternal anyway, so there is no time. Like that. So this, because the mundane concept needs time and place. Yes, you need a reference, because the time and place will be your sambandha and abhideya. Okay? Now, why is it that that's so important to us? Right? Now, in the material consciousness, what is prayojana? Yes. And whose sense gratification? Ours. So it's already worked out. So we don't have to discuss that one. Right? So therefore, for us to get sense gratification, there has to be action to generate the result. For there to be action, there has to be a place. You can't have action with nothing. Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that, then that's why we only look at that. Because in reality, when we say primary, the absolute primary, what's that? Absolute primary. No. We're not talking some sci-fi lingo here. You know, we're not talking... No, means the primary is Krishna, right? And then everything else is secondary to him, right? Because the Icha Shakti is the primary aspect. The Kriya and Jnana is technically secondary to that. It's all within the transcendental. So that means love for Krishna is the primary, and then that's expressed through a time, an action, and through ingredients. Right? Or a field. You understand? So, Mother Yashoda's love for Krishna, that's the primary. Then the secondary will be the manifestation of that through cooking in Nandabhavan. Does this make sense? Right? So, therefore, then, in the spiritual world, they look at the primary. And the secondary is, of course, because you have to do it. It's just like, you want to cook. It's about cooking and feeding the devotees and making offerings and like this. But you do that in a kitchen with ingredients, right, and paraphernalia. So that's just, of course you do that. It's not the big thing, you know? You know, it's like the difference between someone who actually is something and someone who's an enthusiast about that something. You know? So in other words, the enthusiast may even have more paraphernalia than the person who actually does it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the material world. That's the material consciousness, is that we've made ourselves the primary, so therefore for us to get the first, we have to see to the secondary. Right? So for Krishna, he's focused on the primary himself. He expands to take care of the secondary. So that's why we're always looking for other people to do everything for us. We get the other... Naturally, it'll happen because it's all about me. So that's the shock, you know. The kids grow up, and you find out they have their own personality. They want to do their own stuff. Right? Does that make sense? Or, you know, the wife or the husband, you know, they also take care of their own stuff. It's kind of like, where did that come from? You understand? Or, you know, you're working in you have the company, and the people, they're just there to make the money so they can go home and do their own stuff. They're not there just for the company. You understand? So that's the thing. In the material world, we think everyone's going to work for us. But they don't. They're all working for themselves. So when it's brought in line with Krishna according to you know, authorized processes, then it works very nicely. Then the cooperation is very good, because then it becomes natural. Even if it's not fully based on that love for Krishna, at least one's following the tradition, and it works very nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
Can you say that Krishna only expands, but energy, he expands and transforms?
Yes, yes. In other words, as he expands, she expands to match that. So it's always a, how you say,
dance?
Yeah, tango, okay, yes. But it's compatible, or it's, you know, complementary, that's the word. It's complementary. Then, in that capacity, then she transforms in that area. You know, just like Krishna has transformed as Shiva, so therefore then Maya, then she does a transformation here. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, if you want to be specific, then you can say, okay, this aspect of the transformation is connected back to this transformation of Krishna, or expansion of Krishna. But ultimately, it's all just Radha and Krishna. But the point is they're just busy, you know, in their pastimes of Vrindavan. So their expansions take care of everything else. Does that make sense? Yeah. Is that okay? No, can't. And? Yes, Shakti transforms. Krishna, no, he doesn't transform. It's one thing, he's not transforming, it's just three different features. You have, let's say, a man, he owns a company. Okay? So now, does the mechanics of the company, you know, how everything functions and what are the laws of the company, are they there in the company? Where did it come from? It comes from the person who owns the company. But is that specifically personal? No, it's just a rule. You know, it means after pouring yourself a glass of water, you have to turn the water thing off. Okay? So that's impersonal. But it's the mechanics of how the place works. Then there's the structure of it, the hierarchy of it, how everything does, who has what duties and everything like that. Then there's the boss himself as a person. Does that make sense? So it's three features. Everybody has those three features. But it's just for Krishna, it's perfect and unlimited. For us, it'll just be according to our particular, you know, conditioning or nature. So it's not important in the spiritual world, it's only important over here, because the aspects, everyone's focused on Bhagavan, so no one looks at the other two. You know, it's just like, let's say, the wife or the child comes down to the office. What do they see? Do they see the Brahman and Paramatma aspect of the office? No, they'll only see the Bhagavan. So when they're dealing with the person, they're only seeing the personal. Now, if need be, if they're dealing with everybody else in the company and there's some discrepancy, they don't just do everything properly because of the personal connection, then it'll be brought up about the rules of the company and this and that. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, she's the wife of the boss, so she's the boss, right? So, but when she walks out onto the floor, she's the wife of the boss. Does that make sense? So the Paramatma feature comes up, and therefore you better behave yourself. Does that make sense? So like that. Internal potency to external, internal to jivas, that's a transformation. Let's say you have an orange. Is there juice in the orange? Okay, but you have an orange there, right? Has that nice orange color. There's a little stick coming out. There's two little nice bright green leaves and all that. Okay, that's computer graphics. You won't get any juice out of it. Whatever it is, that's okay. But the juice is there. But do you see it? I go, would you like some orange juice? And you go, okay. And I hand you an orange. So it transforms from being in the state of an orange into juice. Does that make sense? Okay. So that's it. It's transforming constantly. You know? Does that make sense? You have your orange, it's sitting there, it's looking nice, and after the leaves get droopy, and then it starts to get spots on it, and then you go away for 2 weeks to Vrindavan, you come back, and then you have your own little personal compost pile on your countertop. So that's transformation. But the principle of what is an orange doesn't change. It's not that your orange turned into compost, now there's no more oranges on the planet. You know, all those guys in you know, over there and down in the bazaar in Jerusalem, all there, they don't have oranges anymore. They're all freaking out because it's all, there's only compost. And then they check and this, and they go back and find out it's because your orange turned into compost. That's why all the oranges in the universe turned into compost, right? No, because the principle of orange remains. That's Brahman. That's unchanging. So anytime you go, any year, any place, you can identify that's an orange because of the Brahman principle. But now exact manifestation of that orange and this and that, what's the taste, what's the color, like that, that's going to be, that's the Shakti. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. When Brahman desired the jivas to be manifest, immediately his transcendental shakti went into action and produced the innumerable jivas. When Brahman wanted the material world to come into existence, immediately his maya shakti, the shadow form as para shakti, went into action, constructing the material cosmos. However, in all these activities, Brahman in himself eternally remains unaffected and without transformation. He simply desires, because he is the icha. Then the kriya and the jnana, the energies from there, they transform and create these. Right? Because from each of them, the energy transforming there is creating the pastimes. Yes?
So when you recognize the material energy, all the ingredients are already there.
Yes. It's just a matter of how you say? Because the point is that the Shakti is still with him. He's in control of the Shakti. So when he glances, that's technically Ramadevi, and he's glancing over the external energy. Because Ramadevi is transformed. But then at the same time as that part that enters, that's the transformed part. The part that reflects back is not. You know, because what enters is Rudra, what reflects back is Sadashiva. So that's the point, is it's enough to understand what's happening. It means we can get technically into it and take it, you know, ad infinitum. But the point is that it's enough that the mind is satisfied that Krishna's God and I'm not. You know, that's all the further. Because if it's just for interest's sake, one could go on unlimitedly. You know, it's just like, okay, you have the child. They hit a particular age. And then you do something. They say, why? You explain it. Why that? They just keep going. There's no end to it. You know, why are you doing that? Oh, I'm cooking lunch. Why are you cooking lunch? So that everybody can eat. Why does everybody have, you know, why? You know, because people get hungry. Why? You know, because that's how, you know, we're going. No, but why? You know, it's just. So, in other words, that kind of interest, though it's considered quite intellectual and thought of within intellectual circles as very an elevated position, but it's just a mature 3-year-old. You know, it's a 3-year-old with more ego than a standard 3-year-old has, right? In other words, he's not cute, so therefore the pint-sized dictatorial qualification gets lost, but the ego, you know, just gets bigger. Does that make sense? So that's why it's, then we'll take it to the part, how much we need for us. So individual to individual, someone, those questions go farther because they think that far. Right? In other words, how far you think practically is how far the question should be asked. Like that. And you'll find maybe in preaching that you have to deal with somebody's questions all over the universe because that's the way their mind works, though they don't need it, but once they see you can answer all the questions, then they'll, you know, okay, then this guy knows, then they'll start to listen to real stuff. Does that make sense? So sometimes it may be used as a tactic. But it's, because the answers are there, it's just a matter of if we want to study them or not. You know, it's just like devotees run into problems, how to explain the cultural, how to explain these different things. And so, but if you understand the analytical, the technical, then you can do it. It becomes easy. Yes.
Well, to be a person that consider Brahman desire,
but the point is he has to be desired. That's why it's a very, what was the term used? Inaccurate, because he's immutable, you know, and without quality. So how can he desire? So if he's desiring, then that means then there is personality, there's qualities in that. Means so behind Brahman there is the personal, and then there's Paramatma, but then there's, you know, this. But they don't accept that. So they'll say these things because then the mind will be satisfied. But technically, according to their philosophy, there is no mind, so what's to be satisfied? It's supposed to be purely intellectual. That's it. Technically, it's all illusion. So even them sitting there talking Vedanta philosophy from Shankara, it's actually still illusion. So why are they talking in the first place? Because if everything's Brahman, then where's the suffer? Where's the problem? So you don't have to preach to anybody. So, you know, so that's the thing, is what they're leaving out is themselves as an individual is having a problem. But Brahman doesn't have a problem, but so why address it? So it's for themselves. So that's the thing, the Buddhism, the Mayava, it's just addressing their own need. You know, I mean, all the religions are doing that. You want benefit, you turn to God. You don't want to stop suffering, you turn to God. But it's about oneself. It's very rare. Now and again, it means if you bring up the point of love for God and that, there'll be no opposition and everybody will think it's nice. But in reality, you know, then what are they praying for?
No, it's the person who will be frustrated.
Yes. Yeah. For the sake of argument, one may say that for Brahman to desire is in itself a transformation of Brahman. Therefore, how may such a transformation exist in an immutable Brahman? This mistaken argument is based upon the observation of the action of desire within the jiva, which should not be applied to Brahman. The desire of the jiva brings the jiva into contact with a further energy of Brahman, which in turn then affects the infinitesimal jiva and thus his desire. Hence, the desire of the jiva is vikara, mutable, by the effect of contact with the powerful energies of Brahman. This is not the case of Brahman, whose incorruptible and supremely independent desire springs unrestrainedly from his intrinsic nature. Right? So his desire is his nature, while the jiva's desire is based upon the environment you're in. So in other words, the jiva, depending upon the transformations of the energy around us, then we have desire. Does that make sense? Yeah, like let's say we take you and plunk you down in the middle of Saks Fifth Avenue. Okay, what's the desire? Okay, clothes, this and that. Okay, we plunk you down in, in Napoli in a, you know, one of the traditional pizzeria. You know, you're going to go looking around for a purse? Or no. Shoes? No. Yeah, later. You understand? So depending upon the environment, that's what one's going to be interested in. Right? You know, the guys are around the ladies, so then they're, you know, behaving themselves and that. You put them around a bunch of just men. They're sitting around and, you know, hitting each other on the back, burping, you know, all that kind of jazz. You know, so it's just the environment, depending upon the transformation, the energy, the jiva changes. So it's dependent. While the desire of Brahman is independent. It's intrinsically his nature. Right? Because he desires, it's his energy that fulfills it. We desire, it's not our energy that fulfills it. We don't have any energy. We are energy.
When we say that devotee reaches a certain level of advancement, then he is not influenced by the environment.
Yes, because, and but why?
How you say, we should not bring up improbable theories. Okay. No, because of, but who doesn't transform? Just go back. The jiva is transforming. The energy is transforming. Who's not? Brahman. So as the devotee advances, he's more situated in. Yes, he's more connected to Krishna. So therefore, his desires and that are on that side. So therefore, you don't see the manifestation on this side. Because for the jiva, when they're since they are dependent, if they're connected to internal potency and functioning, their desires and that are coming up by the transformation of the internal potency, there's not a problem because it's all connected to Krishna. It's only when we are affected by the transformations of the external potency that we have problem. Is that what it says? Yeah. So that's it. As you advance, because you're more connected to Krishna, therefore you're less affected. Means they're affected, means desire, means what's the inherent desire of the jiva in the conditioned state? To? Yes. So, but to do that, then sense gratification. So, the whole idea is that depending upon the environment, what sense gratification comes up? Okay, we put turquoise water, white sand, pleasant sun, coconut trees, a nice beach lawn chair and a little table there and a pina colada. So you want to do what? You understand? Let's say you know how you say back streets of Cali in Colombia. What do you want to do? Run or shoot someone, one or the other, whatever's your conditioning, okay? You understand? So that's the whole point, is your environment, then you're going to look for what sense gratification you can get in that environment. Right? So desire is not going to go away. The difference is it going to be about Krishna? That's the point. Right? You know, we see the pizza. Is it for our senses, or is it a nice thing to offer to Krishna? You understand? So the senses connected to Krishna aren't a problem. We take it, oh no, you have to stop the senses. So, you know, good devotee, you know, doesn't care what he eats, doesn't, you know, this, and that, you know, doesn't put any effort into it, you know, it's all Maya anyway, so why serving nicely? Why all this nice discussion? That's all illusion. But that's the Mayavadi philosophy. That's why it doesn't work very well. You know, it gives knowledge, it gives strength, right? Because in Sankarshan, then Jnana and Bala go together. So that's why you see is that, the those with, you know, that proper knowledge, then they're generally quite strong. But then where's the culture? So that's why without the Prajumna Adiruddha, then that, there's a problem. Does that make sense? So when we see it in connection with Krishna, then it becomes proper. So now the impetus can start from us. I want something. Or it can start from duties, that this is what you can do, this is what you can do with it. Right? So the lower stage is, I want to enjoy. So to enjoy, therefore, then I need to get married, and then in that I can get the job, and then I get money, I can get my facilities, and then I can enjoy. But I'm following the rules. But it's about my enjoyment. Or then there's the person where I do my duties. So, therefore, you have the nature to engage the senses, so my duty is to get married, and that I have to maintain, so I have a livelihood, and I perform all my duties in the house like that, so everything's being done nicely. Right? So the first one is not necessarily pious, the second one is pious. Right? Now, in either of those, I can take it and connect it to Krishna. Right? But sarvadharmam parityaja means you're starting with Krishna. I want to please Krishna. Now, in this situation, we could please like this. Does that make sense? Rather than I want to be involved in these activities, and here's opportunities. I'll offer that to Krishna. So it's a natural progression. That's why the confusion, right? The activity may look the same for the sinful person, for the person following the Vedas, and for the Paramahamsa. That's where it becomes confusing. That's why we see in the fifth and sixth canto, before that, all the activities that were examples that were given were very clear and clean. In the way of that, it's obvious, okay, this is this, that's that. But then in fifth, sixth canto, then it's showing how you have people who are Paramahamsas doing everything nicely. And you have people who are doing everything nicely, and they're not devotees. Because otherwise, then we take it that the secondary aspects are actually devotional service. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like this. Let's say we take, okay, wearing a sari. But the sari itself isn't devotional service. Right? Does that make sense? It's that something that we're wearing to please Krishna. Okay? So since it's not devotional service, then you get two paths from this. One path is, since it's not devotional service, but why am I choosing it? Why wear a sari as opposed to something else? Right? So that's because this is how Krishna likes things. So I want to please Krishna, therefore I follow like that. Or I'm a religious person, so I wear religious attire. Religious attire is like this. It's unsewn. It's something you can wash regularly like this. This is what's recommended. Does that make sense? Like that. Or you can wear it just because, it's fashionable and this and that, and so, it's something that no one else is wearing. If you go to a Western party and you're wearing a sari, you can guarantee no one else is going to be wearing one. So you don't have to worry that, anyone's going to be wearing the same thing, Okay? So, at all these levels you can wear. But the point is devotee, you're wearing it because this is what they do in the spiritual world. So, therefore, I want to please Krishna, so therefore why not dress the opportunities there in such a way that is pleasing to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, if jeans cut off so short that the pockets stick out the bottom, was the thing, you don't think Radharani wouldn't be wearing it? If that was the most attractive thing, she would be wearing it. But it's not that attractive. Right? The pockets are hanging out. They're so stupid. Why don't they cut the pockets off and sew them a little shorter? Why don't they just take out the pockets? They never use them anyway. They're too tight. Right? So, the whole thing is that's the point. It's about Krishna. Right? So, you see, here's the natural line of connecting it to Krishna. So, it may start with me, but it's about Krishna. Okay? Now we can take another line. Is that since it's not about the sari isn't technically what's devotional, it's the wearing of it for Krishna, therefore I don't have to wear a sari. And why not? Because I'm not from a background that wears saris, and so therefore I should wear whatever I want because then I'll be comfortable. Where's the connection to Krishna? How can you say, where's the thing that they're wearing it for Krishna? You understand? So it becomes very, very difficult. Not that you can't do that, but the premise is it starts with themselves. It doesn't start with Krishna. So it's the exact opposite of Sarvadharma Parityaga. It says give up all religions. That includes being, not from a Vedic background.
What about gopi skirts?
Gopi skirts. They're called gopi skirts, not Lady Gaga skirts. Why are we using it? No, but I'm saying, why are we using it? Fashionable, but where's the fashion from?
That's why I'm asking. Is it like something spiritual? Is it just something?
It's not a matter of spiritual. It's a matter of relating it to spiritual. See, there's Vedic. Vedic is the natural thing to engage in spiritual. just like, let us say, I have a very good quality frying pan. Can I cook nice things for Krishna? Okay, let's say I have this really cheapo, beat up aluminum pan. I won't even call it frying pan. Okay? Now, it can be engaged in trying to fry something for Krishna, but how effective is it going to be? So the Vedic culture is the most effective because it's designed to be engaged in spiritual. Now, that's here. In the spiritual world, it is spiritual. Right? Because it's made out of the internal potency and everybody uses it there. It reflects here that we call the Vedic culture. And so naturally you could use it that way. That's what it's supposed to be used for. But if you're pious, you just use it because it gets you good karma or gets you liberation. And if you're impious, then you tend to not use it. And then when you figure it out, oh, then it's the best thing. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like there's things that they've been doing. Let's say, you ever heard of African soap? Anyone's heard of African soap? Who's heard of an African soap? Okay, there's a soap that they've been making in Africa for God only knows how long, right? It's a traditional soap that they make from, they take, like, I think plantains and all kinds of other things. They burn them into ash, that, and then they cook that with other things and herbs and all that, and they cook it for like 6 hours. It's a very serious thing. But as a soap, it will get rid of all skin diseases and everything like that if you use it regularly. Okay? But if you look at it, it's one person described it as a lump of oatmeal. It looks really, it doesn't look, you know, it's not, yeah. Okay? So they've been using this forever, right? And those in Africa, those from African descent have always been using it. But it's considered backwards and this and that. Okay? Right? Now, here's the fun part. You get somebody that has a slightly lighter complexion and is known as coming from a slightly different, species of humanoids. You know, and they are economically more developed. Now, they come across it and find, oh, this is good for the skin and this and that, and it becomes a fashion. Now, oh no, it means, you know, you're not using African soap. You know, what's with you? You know, everybody uses African soap. You understand? This is a problem. So, it's there in the Vedas and all that, but it's got to be backwards and archaic and all that. You know, because like Arjuna and all that, he was like, had 10 thumbs, right? You know, couldn't do anything. And so like that. But, you know, modern man is so good at everything he does, right? So good, like that. So, therefore, when the West discovers it, now it's something important. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem. So because of this, that's where Prabhupada went to the West, preached, brought the Westerners to India, and then the Indians go, oh, okay, now then it's good to be Krishna conscious. You know what I'm saying? So the idea is that it's what they do in the spiritual world, right? Now, of that, you have a variety of things. You have the tradition, you have what's called the Gagra. 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 One Gagra. Two Gagras. Three Gagras. Huh? Four. Okay. Well done. Gagra. It is the origin of the gopi skirt. You take the cloth and it's folded and like that at the top. But a proper Gagra has 50 meters of cloth in it. One skirt. So it's some pretty fancy like that. But, you know, a decent one, 30 meters. But, you know, what the queens wear and the princes, they wear, it's 50 meters. But if you simplify it down, then you get the gopi skirt. So either with the drawstring or the wraparound, right? All it is that it's a skirt, and so that's there, right? Then, in the Vedic thing, then you wear that, then on top of that, that's where you put the sari. You know, so this modern academic thing that saris aren't mentioned in the shastras and that, that's because these modern academics are not as well read as they think they are. It's a standard word used. They have other words for it, but they're not, you know, in other words, if you have misgivings, you can't see what's right in front of you. Just like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Now, he was smarter than everybody in India, so that makes him smarter than anyone on the planet today. Right? So, he knew all the verses. He couldn't understand what they meant. Only after meeting Lord Chaitanya, then he understood the meanings of the verses. He was wondering, you know, all these things, what these mean. And then when he met Lord Chaitanya, then he understood what all those verses meant. Right? So it's revealed. It's Krishna's creation. It's revealed. We think by our own intelligence we'll figure it out. It's a weakness. Okay? So, then, so you have the sari. So that means different ways you can do it. You take it, you pleat it, and then you start around. So in other words, nowadays you take the one sari and you make the skirt, and then you make the top, the sari part. You understand? And nowadays in the local lingo, then these saris, instead of being 4 or 5 meters or more long, now they're just down to 2 meters, and you call them a dupatta. You understand? Give it more time, it'll be a one pata, right? It just gets shorter and shorter. Handkerchief, yes. Yeah. Huh? Ardha pata. That's what you wear to the beach, right? Ardha pata. Okay. You understand? So, therefore, the ghagra and the sari, that was standard dress. Now, the different ways you wear the sari, this, that, and on top of that, they could use the chuddars. You know, so that's where you, like, your dupatta thing comes in. Does that make sense? So they would use all these different things. So because they're from the tradition, using them, they're nice. But of them, then the sari will be more formal than these. So unless you get into those big ghagras, and if you put on a ghagra and put a full sari on top of that as a dupatta, then you could say, okay, that could have the same kind of formalness. But everybody's having trouble enough with, you know, just one or the other, okay? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, those who want to use it, then it's fine. But it's just a matter of how you use it will define on how formal it is or informal. That's the advantage of the sari. Even if it's informal, it's still nice. Like what is generally worn is the nivi. Like that. So the nivi is actually an informal style. It's what the queens would wear just to hang out. Like that. You understand? But that's become the standard style in around India. Like that. But otherwise, the other styles, your Bengalis, your South Indians, the other ones, they're more complicated to put on. Does that make sense? So it's just all these things are there. So it doesn't matter. Any of them work. Is that okay? Yeah. But this idea is that, oh, it's not from our culture, but what is from Western culture, right? When the Italians went north, what did they find? Basically guys in bear skins, right? And how did they get the skin? They ate the bear. You understand? They were just wild tribal guys. So any sophistication beyond that came from somewhere else. Right? Even the name London came from somewhere else. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that means that the original Caucasian culture is the Vedic. And other, you know, branches of the Caucasian line, theirs they've all taken from their so-called savages and tribals. You understand? So if you want to get very technical, it doesn't work. But the point is that it's, what do you say? Why use gopi skirts? Why are they called gopi skirts? Because it's something that we'd see that the gopis would use. Maybe not that, but not that the gopis, you know, when no one's looking, goes down to Ganga Prashads or Gangotris and picks up something and like that, right? You understand? They most likely make their own stuff. Okay? Yeah. So, therefore, because we're considering it like that, so devotees will therefore consider, because this is what they use in the spiritual world, and we're using it for Krishna, therefore, devotees and saris are spiritual. From that aspect, they are. Right? But if you're looking at for that, oh, that's just Vedic, then technically they're not, but they're the mode of goodness. So then we say, oh, we're not from that culture, we're not comfortable wearing these things, then fine, we don't mind. Then just follow that logical point of thought and then say, because we're in the mode of passion and ignorance, that's why we can't relate to the mode of goodness. They make it sound like, oh, we're superior, that's why we're wearing. But passion and ignorance are never superior to goodness. Does that make sense? So we wear it because it's there. Then in the line of that, if one is in a situation you can't wear, you have to wear some other kind of clothes, you try to keep that concept. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. You try to keep it as close to the advantages you get from the Vedic dress. Does that make sense? Yes. Yes. No, I would say that's natural. It's just like when Balaram becomes angry, his eyes become red. You know, it's just describing that, is that Krishna is just so, you know, he's there with the devotees and all that, but Arjuna is taking the lead in this pastime, right? Like that. Because then later, then when Arjuna comes back, and then Draupadi says, no, you know, don't kill him. Like that, then and, you know, and of course, Yudhishthira is going to go along with that. Arjuna is going to be neutral, because if Draupadi said, then he's going to go. But Bhima, he's going to know. So then he needs some support. So Krishna takes that side. You know, so the moods will change like that. So it's that. But in general, it's that the Kshatriya is just the look. They'll have that, the eyes like a bull. You know, yeah, so they're more fierce and all that. So that's why generally they would only be matched with Kshatriya women who could handle that. You know. Yes. But what does it mean, really affect? What it really mean was?
If we get affected, the more we get affected by the external ones, the more we can react on that
stream. The point is what we were discussing before of not being affected means you don't see things from a mundane perspective. Right? In other words, let us say the beginning stage, you see the environment, so it's making you happy or unhappy according to sense gratification. Okay? Now, as we advance more, we're taking a progression, then we could see is that we don't see sense gratification, we only see problems, because it's the material world. So what platform are we working on now? So this is not karma yoga, this is now jnana yoga. So you could say from that platform it is. But as far as, you know, in other words, it inspires you more, the material world is not very interesting. But as far as making you depressed, making you this, that, or making you elated, or this and that, that it'll have less effect. So you're becoming more aware of it, that you're functioning from jnana yoga instead of karma yoga. But when we're discussing Buddha yoga, it just means you just look for opportunities to serve Krishna. So in other words, it will come up, and then it will come to the point where it doesn't bother you. You know what I'm saying? It's not convenient, like Prabhupada mentions, you know, being in the West is not convenient at all for him. Yeah. So, but he does it because of the preaching. So it's not that he's not aware. But what we're meaning is that it affects you emotionally less. But something that before you thought was great, then as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you find is not great. No, but it's devotional service, then you get there's universal principles that are there. Those are flavors. Don't worry about those. Okay. The conclusion is that the Achintya Shakti of Brahman, in obedience to his orders, becomes active and is transformed. The limited intelligence of the jiva cannot discover unaided the subtle and esoteric truth, which can be realized only through hearing the testimony of the Vedas, right? So, and only through hearing authority, because we would say, no, by my intelligence I'll work this out, by pratyaksha or by anuman I'll work this out. But actual, it's only by shabda you can actually understand these points. Right? Does that make sense? So it's when we hear from authorities, then we can see this. So Shukadev Goswami is describing it, that's why we can understand it. Otherwise, we can't understand it. Okay, Shukadev Goswami continued, when the quality of goodness is prominent, the sages and demigods flourish with the help of that quality, with which they are infused and surcharged by the Supreme Lord. Similarly, when the mode of passion is predominant, the demons flourish. And also, when mode of passion is predominant, people can't understand what's right and wrong. Something before was considered right, now maybe right, maybe wrong. Does that make sense? And when ignorance is prominent, the yakshas and rakshasas flourish. So then it's what is right is wrong, and what's wrong is right. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is present in everyone's heart, fostering the reactions of sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna. Verse 8, Srila Prabhupada comments, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not partial to anyone, pratigya. The conditioned soul is under the influence of the various modes of material nature, and behind material nature is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But one's victory and loss under the influence of sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna are reactions of these modes, not of the Supreme Lord's partiality. Just the modes are changing on their own. That's just how it works. If it's nice, it'll become not nice. If it's not nice, don't worry, it'll become nice. Right? So that's just the way it works. Srila Jiva Goswami in the Bhagavad Sandarbha has clearly said, Satvadayo na santishe yatracha prakrita gunaha. Sashudhas sarva shudhebhyaf puman adhyayaf prasidatu pladini sandini samvit chaktyeka sarva samstitao pladatapa kari misra twaino guna varjite. According to this statement of the Bhagavad Sandarbha, the Supreme Lord, being always transcendental to the material qualities, is never affected by the influence of these qualities. The same characteristic is also present in the living entity, but because he is conditioned by material nature, even the pleasure potency of the Lord is manifested in the conditioned soul as troublesome. In the material world, the pleasure enjoyed by the conditioned soul is followed by many painful conditions. Right, so he's unaffected by them because how he wants it to go a particular way, it goes that way. Right? And for him, it's all the interaction with the devotees. So it's about the relationship. So if it's about relationship, doesn't matter what happens, then things go on nicely. If you expect a certain sense gratification from a relationship, from a situation, from an endeavor, then there's always going to be a problem. So that's why it's said the hladini potency acting on the jiva still creates problem, because you want happiness and you work hard to get it. And then when you get it, you're worried about losing it. Or if you do lose it, then you suffer. Does that make sense? But for Krishna, no problems. For instance, we have seen that in the two great wars, which were conducted by the Rajaguna and Tamaguna, both parties were actually ruined. The German people declared war against the English to ruin them, but the result was that both parties were ruined. Although the Allies were apparently victorious, at least on paper, actually neither of them were victorious. Udaharana, right? So that's the point. So here's the example, is that we're saying that they're affected by this. They want to win. Everybody's winning in all this and that, but at the same time, is how much loss was there? I'm not sure. I think it's... I'm not sure if it was one side or the whole war. I think it was 20 million died in World War I. I don't know if that was just the Allies or if that was Allies and Axis. Anybody? Combined. That's a lot of people. You know? And so you can't say, it's a glorious day. You know, it's glorious because, now more people aren't going to die. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is neither side really comes out nice. Therefore, it should be concluded that Supreme Personality, Godhead, is not partial to anyone. Everyone works under the influence of various modes of material nature, and when the various modes are prominent, the demigods or demons appear victorious under the influence of the modes. So either those that are good, those that are not good, those that can't figure out what's good or not good, then they'll be prominent or not. Everyone enjoys the fruits of his qualitative activities. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:11-13. The manifestations of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, uncontrollable desire, hankering, and intense endeavor develop. O son of Kunti, where there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, madness, illusion, inertia, and darkness are manifest. And so then you can just tell, what kind of day it is by what's prominent like that. And the mode, it'll always be changing. So that's why we're unaffected. We try to do our duties. That's the benefit of the Vedic systems. You have duties to do. Right? And then the modern thing, you don't feel good. You may not get up. But in the Vedic thing, you get up anyway. Because if you don't get up, you'll just cultivate that mode. Right? But if you get up, you take your bath, you do all the things, then you add some goodness to it because you're following that, though the predominant may be passion or ignorance, it will have some effect, the balance. That's why the Vedic is there. It's no matter what happens, this is what you're supposed to be doing. You do that naturally, spontaneously, great. You're doing it because you're supposed to, then nice. Does that make sense? But either way, the life goes on in a stable way. Relationships are stable. Now, if you're doing that to please Krishna, that's the best. Yes? All the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. It means all of them are engaged according to what the Shastra says. Your eyes are looking at what they should be looking at. Your nose is smelling what it should be smelling. That. Then you're also keeping them all clean. Because in your Dinacharya, then you're going to clean all these parts of the body. Because there's rules on all that. So therefore, then does that make sense? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart, simply gives the results of the increase in the various qualities. But he is impartial. He supervises victory and loss, but he does not take part in them. So, in other words, if you follow the process of goodness, even if it's not a mode of goodness day, then what's the results of practicing in goodness? You'll get future goodness. Right? But as I pointed out, is being in goodness isn't the perfection. It's pure goodness. So therefore, following the recommendation in goodness for Krishna, that will then give the result of situations of goodness, but the main thing it will give will be devotion to Krishna. Right? The mode of goodness will just come as a side thing. Does that make sense?
The various modes of material nature do not work at all at once. The interactions of these modes are exactly like seasonal changes. Sometimes there's an increment? Okay. An increment of Rajaguna, sometimes of Tamaguna, and sometimes Sattvaguna. Generally, the demigods are surcharged with Sattvaguna, and therefore when the demons and the demigods fight, the demigods are victorious because of the prominence of their Sattvaguna qualities. However, this is not the partiality of the Supreme Lord, Upanaya and Nigama. Right? So we see here, as Prabhupada's made the point, he's made it clear that the Supreme Lord is independent of this. He just, the modes are there and they function. Depending upon how you respond in them, you get results. And that produces your future results. So even though you may consider something good or not, we see in the long run it's not necessarily good. It's something bad, it's not necessarily bad. Right? So that's given as the examples. But because it's Lord's law, therefore the mode of goodness triumphs over the mode of passion, triumphs over the mode of ignorance. Right? In the long run. So therefore, it's not Krishna who's involved. He provides the modes, there's the mechanics, how they work. How you respond to them is how they'll deal with you. You know? In other words, modern man is so impressed with, okay, let us say you go on the internet. Okay? Depending upon, and there's ads. Right? Depending upon what you do on the internet, the ads will be adjusted to match what you do. And they think this is a new and fabulous thing, that the modes of nature have been doing this in time immemorial. You understand? So you're interested in something, you just see that, if you have the karma for it. Or, you're interested in something, then Maya arranges, you never see that.
You know. Huh?
Yeah, so it's just... whatever it is, whichever will create the most difficulty, then one or the other will be there. Yes?
In a society that functions with ignorance and passion, it's very difficult to be on the level of goodness.
Yes.
And also, it appears that the results, they come really after some time.
Yes, it's slower. Because you're dealing with so much passion and ignorance, which are against goodness, that it takes a while for it to come around. So in other words, you have in an activity, it's just like yoga mentions. You have the asana itself. You have the, the meditation, the mind. You have the breathing. Does that make sense? You know, all these things are considered. So when all that's there, then you'll say the asana is proper. Right? So... therefore, if you're just sitting in the asana, it's not as proper as if the, you know, with the mind, the breathing, and this and that. That's why slowly you get all those there. So, therefore, in the beginning, we come across the activities of goodness that are recommended. We can follow we may be able to follow the activity, but it may be what our mind are like. So, asana, I mean, how we're situated. So we're doing the activity, but is the activity situated properly, or are we situated properly when we perform it? Right? Is our endeavor within it proper? Is our mind proper? So that's why it will take time. But because it's being done for Krishna, it will happen as quickly as possible. Because on the material platform, it may never happen. Right? It will take forever, you know, thousands of lifetimes. But on the spiritual platform, it can come very, very quickly. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like devotees do things. You have, comes to mind as, I don't know if you ever heard, Govinda Maharaj, he would have a saxophone player with him. Right. Now, technically if you hear when she would do, you know, just play on her own, the riffs and all that, she'll be doing stuff that probably, you know, Coltrane and company would be impressed with. But they will be practicing day in, day out, hours and hours and hours every day, and they miss a day of practice, and it's a problem. Well, she just plays when there's kirtan. So how is that coming? How is that inspiration coming? That comes from devotional service.
She's using it Krishna consciousness, so therefore it'll move very quickly. She wants to use it for herself, then things will slow down. That's why you see sometimes devotees are doing really nice things, you know, like that, or musicians are doing great things, and they're big in the movement, and this and that, and so much is happening, so much preaching, then they decide that they want to go out and do their own thing. You never hear of them again. They're just a face in the crowd, another face in the crowd. You know, sorry. So that's the thing, is that wherever you get off, I mean, where you got on, when you get off, that's where you get off. We're thinking, okay, I came in here, you know, crazy hippie, and then I go up and I'm big, big guy, very sophisticated and all this, but when you walk out, you go right back wherever you were. That's just how it works. Does that make sense? But you see, is that same person comes back into Krishna consciousness, they go right back to wherever they were. So it's not like, oh, he's been in Maya for 20 years, you know, what can he do? He'll come and give the same lecture and the same kirtan or the same management as he did 20 years ago. So that's the thing. It's two different things. Is that work? In his Paramatma Sandarbha Anucheda 103, Srila Jiva Goswami comments, here someone may ask, why is the Lord at that time not favorable to the demigods? The answer is given here in the words Rajas Tamas Khan, when they are covered by passion and ignorance. The modes of passion and ignorance push one far away from the Supreme Lord. That is because these two modes are very displeasing to him. That is the meaning. Right? So he's saying because Krishna is not interested in the mode of passion and ignorance. Therefore, if you absorb yourself, then you get pushed away from the Lord. Well, mode of goodness is what he functions in, but in pure goodness, right? So in other words, goodness means it has some passion and ignorance in it, but at least it has the form of goodness, though the intent and other things may be polluted. Pure goodness means the form is goodness and the intent is goodness. That's pure goodness. So that's why we recommend goodness, because it's non-different from the platform that they function in the spiritual world, as far as form goes. So this idea is, oh, that's in the spiritual world, it's that here, it's another thing. No, it's just whatever you want. The modes are there. You follow goodness, you go towards Krishna. You follow passion and ignorance, you go away. Krishna says there's only one path. Those that are more in goodness are going towards the Lord. Whether they know they're interested in the Lord, that's another thing. The smartas, they're following the mode of goodness, they're moving towards the Lord, but they're only going to get as far as the heavenly planets and stop. Those interested in Brahman, they'll get to the Brahman platform and stop. Only devotees will actually get to Krishna. So that means when you're performing the activities of goodness to please Krishna, that's the most dynamic. While the modes of passion and ignorance, those are the ones that take you away from Krishna and take you down to the hellish regions, right? So, if all there is the modes of passion and ignorance to engage, okay, you may engage them. But the point is it's not recommended. It can be done, but it's not recommended. Right? Just like Prabhupada was mentioning, they were traveling. And sent the devotees out to get something to eat. The only thing to eat were chili pakoras. Right? And there's not even a chutney. We're just talking about just chili pakoras. Right? So then they come back to Prabhupada. There's nothing. The Prabhupada said, when you're hungry, any nonsense will do. So they bought the chili pakoras and ate chili pakoras. Right? But now, if you have something else, you don't say, no, but Prabhupada ate chili pakoras and all that. So chili pakoras is the thing. So now, when we have other things to eat, no, we'll eat the chili pakoras. That's less intelligent. So, yes, when there is an opportunities of goodness, we may be using these lower things in options in Krishna's service, but as soon as the opportunity is there to take it, one would. So we even see this reflected in administration, that a Brahmin who can't perform his duties because the opportunity is not there, they take up the occupation of Kshatriya Vaishyas. But as soon as the opportunity is there, then the king is to see that he takes them up. he becomes a businessman, and then the opportunity is there to again follow his Brahminical occupation, but he prefers to do business, then the Kshatriya then makes the point. So are you going to be a Brahmin or are you going to be a Vaishya? Because if he says he wants to do the business, then he'll be recategorized as a Vaishya and he doesn't have the Brahminical position anymore. Because he could do the Brahminical and he doesn't do it. But if it's not available and he's doing, then he's still considered a Brahmin. You understand? So when the preferred endeavor or situation is not available, you use the next best. But when it is available and you don't take it and claim that the lower one is just as good, that's less intelligent. That will push you away from Krishna. Right? So that's the... You know, you may be being pushed away, but you're looking at Krishna. You know, while the smarta is looking away from Krishna but going towards Krishna. But the idea is you should be looking towards Krishna and going towards Krishna. That's best. No, but Shuddha Sattva is mode of goodness being used for Krishna.
It's not a category beyond the two.
It's the actual true form of goodness. That's why it's called pure goodness. You have goodness means that there's some passion and ignorance mixed. So basically, as long as it's 60% goodness, you call it goodness. If it's 60% goodness, you call it goodness. Right? But that means 40% not is other mixes. You understand? Okay. So that's why we don't do it. You can say, but we're Westerners, it's that blah, but the point is it's not pleasing to Krishna. Because the point is being done for Krishna, that's what really pleases him. And doing what the acharyas do to please him, that's even more. It's just like you have prayers. So one offers one's own heartfelt prayers, but it's based on what are the prayers of the acharyas. So based on theirs, then you put together your own prayers, following in their footsteps. Right? So that's the whole thing. The mood has to be there. Sukadev Goswami continued, "The all-pervading personality of Godhead exists within the heart of every living being, and an expert thinker can perceive how he is present there to a large or small extent. Just as one can understand the supply of fire in wood, the water in a water pot, or sky within a pot, one can understand whether a living entity is a demon or a demigod by understanding that living entity's devotional performances. A thoughtful man can understand how much a person is favored by the Supreme Lord by seeing his actions." Right? So someone who's situated nicely in doing things to please Krishna, then you can understand they're advancing more, they're developing more. When they're more worried about themselves, then that's going to be less. You know, or they're engaged in activities that are recommended over those that aren't. So like that you can get an idea. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "An example is given to show how, with the increase or decrease of a guna, the body is suitable to the guna increase or decrease. Fire is latent in wood, water is in a cup, and ether is in a pot. When there is more wood, there is more fire, and when there is less wood, there is less fire. One does not call this inequality. Similarly, when there is more sattva encouraging to devatas, there are more forms of devatas. At that time, rajas favoring demons decreases, and there are less demons. If the demons are suppressed and the devatas are the suppressors, one can say that the Lord favors the devatas and disfavors the demons. When rajas increases, then one can say the Lord favors the demons and disfavors the devatas. From the common viewpoint, this may seem like favoritism, but it is not. For when sattva becomes prominent, the Lord favors the devatas, and when sattva is not prominent, he does not favor them." Right? So it's just naturally just how the modes are moving according to the desires of the living entity. therefore, then you'll see. So Krishna, each mode has its prominence. So whichever is happening, it's like, let's say everything's going nice for you. Are you saying, oh, the Lord is so kind and so merciful and like that? It's just our regular day, but everything's going okay. Right? But as soon as something goes wrong, oh, why is the Lord? Why doesn't he like me? Why doesn't he, you know, he helps me? You understand? So that's the, no, it's just how the modes are. It works nice. It doesn't work. As the mode comes up, that one gets favored. Yes?
Srila Prabhupada adds, we have the practical experience of seeing that one person is able to do very wonderful things, whereas another cannot do those same things and cannot even do things that require only a little common sense. Therefore, how much a devotee has been favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be tested by the activities the devotee has performed. In Bhagavad Gita 10.10, the Lord also says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogham tam yenamam upayanti te. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. This is very practical. A teacher instructs the student if the student is capable of taking more and more instructions. Otherwise, in spite of being instructed by the teacher, the student cannot make strides in his understanding. This has nothing to do with partiality. When Krishna says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam, this indicates that Krishna is prepared to give bhakti yoga to everyone, but one must be capable of receiving it. That is the secret. Thus, when a person exhibits wonderful devotional activities, a thoughtful man understands that Krishna has been more favorable to this devotee. Because they're doing something nice, so Krishna's given the understanding how to come to him. So there's some sincerity, something. What it is, that's we just understand by the symptoms, favor is there. And then it works nicely like that. So there's something that's there, some sincerity. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll break here for a few minutes. Srila Prabhupada.